This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Star Trek author Una McCormack, and you're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast for Star Trek Discovery. I am your co-host, Brandi Jackala, and joining me today are Nick Collinson and Liam Smart. So, Nick, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm stuck at home now, working from home, just trying to finish off my thesis and maintain social distance, but aside from that, doing great.
Okay, good. Well, Liam, how are you, dear?
I am good. I'm not stuck at home because I can't do my job from home. So that's fun, getting out in the public, getting sick. Lovely. But at the end of the day, we can all stick together and we'll get through it. But social distancing does mean you can have like really, really nice hugs with yourself in front of people, pretending like you're hugging them at a social distance. I did it in a car park.
Digital hug.
And it looked stupid, but at the same time, you can just say it's social distancing. So.
Yeah. I have not left the house in 8 days.
Yeah, you've been really bad, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Been sick. It's fun. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Please, everybody, be responsible. So the stupid thing is that it can take up to 14 days for symptoms to show. So yeah, sometimes you have no idea where you picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. And of course, there are still not enough tests to go around.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been confirmed that I have COVID-19. But, yeah, unless I am having a respiratory illness or over the age of 60 or have a compromised immune system, I'm pretty much not going to be able to be tested. So thumbs up. Anyway, but I'm still here. We're all still here.
On the flip side, I have been tested.
Yes, you have been. And you were negative.
Because I got back from Indonesia, started feeling a little bit ill, and one of the requirements of that time was any symptoms and been overseas, you had to get tested. So I did, but fortunately I was negative, except my nasal passage has never been so violated.
That's not a sentence I wanted to hear today.
It just went, like, they shoved something so far up my nose that I felt like it, like, hit my eyeball or something.
Why?
Well, that's where they test. They test, like, up here.
In the sinuses?
I don't know. Between your eyebrows, inside your nose. I don't know. It just shoved it so far up, it hurt. So, if you're worried about things in your nose, maybe don't get tested. No, do get tested. If you're able to, do get tested.
Yeah, right.
Nasal violation aside. Yeah.
Right now, it's only people with the aforementioned conditions or ages. And celebrities. Celebrities can get tested really easily.
Yes, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Those with money.
Yeah, because I won't go look up the story about the Utah Jazz being quarantined in Oklahoma City for 2 weeks. It's really fun.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
So
let's move on to something bright.
Okay. Well, that's not going to be this.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, we've had some new reviews. So should we go with the oldest one first?
We'll go with the oldest one first. Yeah.
And I'm going to read this one, and then I guess each of you could read one as well. You know, because we have three.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just, and I'm going to get in real close like this. Is that okay? Is the levels okay for you guys right there?
All good.
It's a bit of a turn on.
Does that work? Okay. Well, this review is entitled, Not a Fan of Brandy. I used to love this show, but she makes it unlistenable. Her voice is grating, and I always deleted podcast episodes when I found out she was a guest. Now that she's on this one every week, I gotta unsubscribe. And that's from Tractor Pull Reject.
Yeah, so how does it feel to be grating?
I'm not grating.
I would never have said thought that. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, so I guess, I don't know. Since this person is unsubscribed, nothing that I say matters. So, sorry, not sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to change the way I speak for people, thanks. So if you don't have constructive criticism, maybe don't be a troll.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Well, that's the thing. If you're just going to go and tell someone that you don't like something purely based on a particular sound or like what they sound like in general, why bother telling someone? It goes back to that old adage, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't bother saying it at all.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you haven't provided anything that we could make better.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just hurt someone.
Yeah, so...
So don't be an asshole.
Yeah. I don't think we can leave that word in.
I will bleep it out. Okay.
But yeah, I just feel like, you know, don't be a troll. The thing is that we do not get paid for doing this.
Mm.
We do this with our own free time. We provide our own equipment. We provide, you know, basically everything that's necessary for this show to get posted. We do that ourselves. The only thing we don't provide is the network. Mm. And we're very grateful to the network for providing for us. But, yeah, we do this just for the love of doing it. And, all I can say is if you don't like my voice, and I'm assuming that you have already unsubscribed, but I do kindly invite you never to listen again while I'm here.
Exactly. And just following up on that point, Brandy says we don't get paid. It actually costs us probably around $600 to $700 Australian dollars a year with subscriptions to two different platforms. And whilst Nick and Brandy spend a couple of hours every fortnight recording, it takes me another 3 hours to edit. And then it takes other people to put the artwork together for the show and then to publish it on the publishing platform. So just bear that in mind when you think you're just going to be putting some rubbish as an iTunes review.
Yeah.
Now on to the next one. This one is from someone called 15 Jules in the British Apple Podcasts app. It's entitled New Hosts Sad Face. They gave us a 1-star review and it says, used to be awesome, but the new hosts are terrible.
Tell us how you really feel.
Cute. We're terrible and grating. Yeah. Well, do you know what? Again, no constructive feedback, no constructive criticism. Don't give it.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Nick, well, what is your one say?
Is from someone called Diamond Rose 2857 via the Australian Apple store, which is nice. This one, I'm just going to bring us home with something nice. This one is called Finally, with 2 exclamation points. And they've given us 5 stars, and it says, so nice to hear Aussie accents on a Star Trek podcast. Liam, Nick, and Brandy are knowledgeable, thoughtful, and often insightful, but always entertaining, and Brandy's laughter is utterly delightful, which I agree with.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's, I've always found it obnoxious, but other people seem to do all right.
Oh.
Oh, no, I love it. It's the highlight of my highlight of my editing.
It's very loud and boisterous, I guess is the best word, but that's okay.
So, I mean, it's not obnoxious. It's infectious.
Oh, thank you. I guess I am the COVID-19 of laughs.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
I'll take
it. I'm loving how we're dating this episode.
Like, I want people to be listening to this. If you are listening to this episode in like 3 years' time, when this whole pandemic thing has hopefully passed, just yeah,
and been recalled, the toilet roll saga of 2020.
Think back to the very, very weird world we were all living in when you when you couldn't even get a toilet roll in the shops. No. We don't only want positive reviews, obviously. If there's something that we do that you don't like, that you think is something we could fix, obviously tell us, because, you know, we want constructive criticism. But if you just think they're terrible, then, well, shrug emoji.
Yeah, that's not going to make us go away.
Yeah.
It might make me more terrible and more grating, to be honest.
Yeah, because, you know, that's like just your opinion, man. Let's move on. Nick, you have something in news.
So, it has been a little while since the last time we recorded, and one thing that has shown up since the last time we recorded is there has CBS have shared a new promo image for season 3 of Discovery. There have been a few different versions of it, but it all basically involves the new main cast sort of standing on this rock looking very heroic with Burnham just holding up this tattered flag in the middle of it. It's very cool, and it just puts one thing into my mind, which I think I saw Jesse Gender mentioning on Twitter as well, so I'm not the only one who thought this, but as soon as I saw this, I just thought, do you hear the people singing the song of angry men? Because it's very, even though, like, the flag's blue and not red, but it's very that kind of heroic final scene of Les Miserables where they're standing on top of the barricade, waving the flag. Yeah, it's just this very heroic image. And it also features two new characters in it. So, it's got David Ajala as Book. And then there's this other person standing between Stamets and Culber, who we haven't heard anything about this character yet, but I think they're the same person who you just see a quick shot of working in the Jeffries tube in one of the trailers. And only thing I'm thinking about this person is that there have been rumors going around, nothing of this confirmed whatsoever, that there's going to be a character in season 3 who is gender non-binary, which I imagine or believe this is who this character is. And if that's true, then I think that's brilliant, because I know several people who identify as non-binary, and I would like them to be able to see themselves represented more, especially in Star Trek. So, if that's true, and that's who this character is, definitely, that's awesome.
I can't zoom in far enough, but I was wondering whether we're going to pick them up on Trill. Can't quite see any of the Trill spots.
Sure. I think, and I kind of hope that the character is human, because, you know, Star Trek has a little bit of a history of, like, trying to have, you know, characters of, like, different kind of gender identities and stuff, and play it off as, like, they're an alien and that's what their society is.
Yeah. It's difficult to tell because of the haircut, it covers part of their ears, so they could be Vulcan.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We just don't know. Yeah. We just don't know. Ooh, a mystery.
Yeah. Oh, it's a mystery. It's cool. I like it. I like some of these little tiny teasers. Waiting to see what happens after the final episode of Picard. I feel like we will get a new trailer or teaser or something like that very, very soon after that, because they're going to want to keep people interested.
Also, I'd just like to point out how Michelle Yeoh is prominent in this as well. They haven't got people like Detmer, Bryce, Reese in this. They've actually got... Yeah, so we've got Georgiou in there. As a character that's appearing. So, if this is indeed more of the main cast, that'll be quite interesting, especially to see how she gets back for the supposed Section 31 show.
Mm.
That's the thing that I'm excited about.
One little interesting thing, quickly, is that Culber, the new character, and Stamets appears to be in
uniform.
The Discovery uniform still, mm-hmm. whilst Burnham, Saru, and Tilly are not, which suggests that they are split up further than just Burnham being split up from everyone.
Yeah.
Well,
we just don't.
We obviously know Book is not from.
It's not from Discovery.
The original timeline, and we also know that Georgiou never wears uniforms.
There was a quick shot of her wearing an admiral's uniform in one of the trailers, though, I think, which is pretty cool.
Mm.
I think.
Was there?
I could be wrong.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. Haven't seen a trailer for Donkeys.
Did you just say you haven't seen the trailer for Donkeys?
It's a saying.
It is. No, I know it is. I just very rarely hear it.
Anyway.
Moving on. Let's get to the meaty part now, y'all.
Yeah, so my original idea that I kind of wanted to think of this as was, I almost wanted to call it wasted potential, but that was a bit negative, and I don't want to think of it that way, because a lot of it I don't actually think has been wasted. It's more, it's unanswered questions. It's, you know, threads and things that have been left open from season two that we maybe may not be able to address in season three because of the time jump or things like that. And the first one out of these that I really wanted to talk about, just at least to mention at least, is a little bit in season one, but a lot through season two, especially like the first half, there was a lot of mention of the Vulcan logic extremists, which just sounds like a... It just kind of clicked to me as a really interesting idea, especially when they mentioned that one of the like Section 31 admirals, the Vulcan woman, was one of them. And that ended up to be sort of a red herring, and it went down the path of like control in Section 31 instead. So I did feel like this was a thread that was left dangling. And I personally liked it because it's just like, you hear the term logic extremist and it sounds like such a complete contradiction, because, you know, extremism is like inherently illogical. It's like, A, I feel like if someone holds extremist views about something, then of course those views are going to feel very logical to them. Also, I kind of almost feel like it might have been a... I don't even know if this was in any way intended, but it's how I read it, was as a somewhat of a reference to certain groups in the real world, who especially are quite active on things like Reddit, within the kind of like online skeptics community, who I would personally describe as logic extremists. These are people who I think they refer to themselves as intellectual dark web or something like that. Very, very briefly, and I don't want to go into them because I kind of don't want to give these groups the oxygen of attention, is that they are groups who may have evolved out of like atheist or skeptic movements, but have kind of gotten very twisted and tend to be especially very anti-feminist and very transphobic, and somehow find a way to twist that into them sounding as if they're being logical, or making it seem like it. And they're very much like, oh no, I believe in logic and reason and none of this emotion. I don't care about your feelings. And so that's just where that kind of logic extremist thing kind of made the connection in my mind. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to see Star Trek's take on what something like that could look at. Especially coming from the Vulcans, who are meant to be like very, very logical, but also often portrayed as quite cold and unemotional, or at least some of them are. If we do end up getting more Star Trek set in that period of time, I really want to see more addressing what that group is.
I think this is the way that I look at it. Just like religion, you can make logic fit into any box you want to if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
And so there are people who will take things and twist them for their own purposes, and it will look insane to the rest of us, but to them it makes perfect sense. So this actually reminds me, okay, again, I'm going to relate this to a video game. Sorry in advance. But there's a side quest in Fallout 4 where there are just all of these groups of robots just roaming the Commonwealth and just exterminating everyone they come across. And they always have like an iBot with them, which is basically a little floating round droid that is talking about their mission to help the Commonwealth. And when you finally get back to, when you finally get to the last piece of the puzzle, it turns out that these robots had been programmed by this girl who called herself the Mechanist, and she was trying to help the Commonwealth, but she was using these older robots called RoboBrains, which was an experiment where they took a human brain and put it in a robot body. And the thing is they were experimenting on criminals and insane people. So, yeah, so that wasn't a great idea. But the logic of it was, you know, their prime directive, basically, was to go out and help humans. And they get out there and they're like, okay, well, even if I help you, you still have about a 75% chance of dying. So the best way to help you is to kill you. And that was their logic.
That is, yeah, no, that goes into a little bit of like that kind of Isaac Asimov iRobot thing. And I feel like this was actually, that idea was played with a little bit with Control in Discovery Season 2. Is, yeah, the idea of these robots that are designed to help and protect humans, and then that evolves into help and protect humanity as a whole. They realize that humanity is self-destructive, and they're like, oh, how do we protect these humans? Subjugate them, kill them before they can kill each other.
So, though it sounds illogical, there is actually logic in that. Yep. It's just not... It's flawed, to say the least.
Jaime has one of the best quotes in Voyager regarding logic in Season 1 in Prime Factors. Now, as soon as Nick said we were going to be talking about logic extremists, it came to my head, and she says to Tuvok, you can use logic to justify just about anything. That's its power and its flaw.
And the same thing goes for religion.
That is really, really good.
Now, just as a quick reminder for everyone, the logic extremists are only a small subset of the Vulcan population. Mm-hmm. They really, really hone in on true Vulcan ideology, which is logic above all else, which obviously is what the teachings of Sarak has said, but that's more to try and stop the wars that we saw through the Enterprise trilogy. They also believe that humans are inferior and opposed to mixing. So, they're sort of parallels a lot of just other things that are happening in everyday life as well. Yeah. In terms of, we don't want other people from other countries coming in, etc. Don't want our religions mixing or races mixing, etc. Yeah. And
an awful lot of really interesting parallels with the real world there. And I really hope we get to see more of them, because I think one of those things that and that kind of modern Star Trek is doing very well is paralleling those particular negative aspects of our society today, showing them in the stark light of day.
Well, the most obvious one of these was the fact that we had a suicide bomber.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
In real life, extremism in terms of some religions. I don't care what religion that may be in, because it happens across all sorts of things, but a lot of the time that happens.
Yes.
And for a logic extremist suicide bomber to be shown on screen in Star Trek, blowing up a ship with a high profile ambassador on it in Sarek, it is doing exactly what Star Trek usually does in terms of bringing something from the real world straight back into the show. And I thought that that was one of the most stark examples of that in Season 1 with Vlatak.
Yeah.
Or Vlatak, however you pronounce his name.
Agree completely. I feel like we don't talk about these things enough in real life, and so I'm glad that they're bringing them up in places like Star Trek, simply because you can reach a pretty big audience that way. And whether they're conscious of it or not, eventually, you know, they get the point. Well, most of them, not all of them. Some people want to bury their heads in the sand. Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
And then there's the other 80% of people who just want to live and let live.
Just get on with everyone.
Or at least try.
Do you guys have any ideas and thoughts about where they may have came from and where they've headed to, given what we know from things like TOS Enterprise and then TNG and DS9 and Voyager? Any sort of headcanon ideas?
I don't know. I mean, I know that, so Brandy, obviously you're much more familiar with Enterprise, and Liam, I know that you watched the that trilogy recently, but I do think that you're right in thinking that that sort of like Vulcan sort of separatist group or whoever it is that don't want Vulcans to mix with humans in that era. Mm-hmm.
Now, Brandy, you're our resident Enterprise expert, and I know I watched the three episodes when I was in isolation for only 48 hours, thankfully, but do you want to quickly just explain what happened in Forge Awakening and Kirshara? Because I believe there is some minor connection that you can be made within headcanon.
basically, it starts out with the Federation embassy on Vulcan being bombed. And our good friend Admiral Forrest is killed protecting that guy. Oh,
Saval.
Thank you.
Saval.
It's just fever brain. So Enterprise, of course, goes to try and investigate, find out what happened, because Saval is very upset and he's very aware that he is alive because a human gave his life for him. And they are trying to, basically, the Vulcan High Council is trying to pin it on someone else, someone human. And really, the whole reason is that the Vulcan High Council doesn't want the embassy there. They don't want humans there. They just want to be Vulcan. And they've also got a thorn in their side of a group called themselves the Cyrenites. And they're very secretive. Nobody exactly knows who's a Cyrenite, who's not, but they know that their leader is T'Pau, and they are hiding out somewhere in the forge. So T'Pau finds out that her mother was a Cyrenite. Her husband tells her that she was a Cyrenite, and now T'Pau's got to find her mother. So wackiness ensues. They meet up with another Vulcan. She and Archer go into the forge. They meet up with another Vulcan. The Vulcan transfers something into Archer just before dying. And now Archer's got, Surok's soul. Surok's Katra in his head. And now he's basically talking to Surok in his head. And they're trying to find the Kirshara, which is basically an artifact that has all of the teachings and writings of Surok. And we get to see some of what happened in Vulcan's past to drive them to finally embrace logic and lay down their arms. And of course, the Vulcan government absolutely does not want them to find that. They do not want the Cyrenites to bring forth any new religious text, because whatever is uncovered, if it's real, it is going to loosen their hold on the planet. And we find out, of course, that our High Council leader is actually
Velas.
Velas, yes. But it's not, I'm looking for a word. Yes, but no.
Colluding?
With, thank you. Colluding with Romulans. Thank you. fever brain. Anyway, it all becomes a horrible, huge mess, but in the end, the High Council is basically dissolved when Archer does come back with the actual Kirshara and activates the Kirshara. So, yeah.
Which holds the original texts of Surok. Yep.
So now the Cyrenites are not public enemy number one. And it's revealed, of course, that a Vulcan was the one who bombed the embassy. And it was all at the command of Vlas. And that's a dangling thread in Enterprise that never really gets resolved, is what happened to Vlas after that, because he took off with the Romulans.
Yeah. See, this is what I think now became, in my own head canon at least, what led towards the logic extremists of Discovery, in that you could have had a bunch of Cyrenites potentially who also didn't like humans, because the Cyrenites followed Surak's logic, but although that was meant to be peaceful. So you could have had some people that were left over from Velas's group, potentially, I guess, that still doesn't like humans, and they were also super logical that they decided to split off into their own, I guess, like cult thing that then morphed into the logic extremists.
It's possible, I suppose.
Because, I mean, let's face it, the logic extremists bombed the Vulcan Learning Center. I guess that was to kill Spock, because Spock was a half-human, half-Vulcan hybrid.
It's a possibility. I'm not saying that it couldn't have happened that way. I just never thought of that connection before, so.
And then we could, even go on to say that the extremists have gone on to create that isolationist movement in that Next Generation episode that Picard, like, fake died in. Because they wanted to get rid of all non-Vulcan impurities.
Yes, that is true.
So, in my headcanon, it all links up somehow with a lot of hand-waving.
Yeah.
Which is how I treat a lot of my life. Just hand-wave it. It will work together.
It's fine.
It'll be fine.
It's all good. You can make it work.
All fit together.
So, whilst it's an unanswered on-screen question.
Yeah.
That's the power of headcanon. Mm-hmm. That's its power and its flaw.
Oh, headcanon's fun. All right. So, what's our next unanswered question?
Well, I did have a couple of really quick things to say about...
Oh, sure.
Well, just to say about Arium, which is the next one. There's not that much, I think, to talk about here, except that for me personally, it's weird because, like, that episode where Arium died, Project Daedalus, I thought it was a really good episode, and I thought the way it kind of showed her personality and character, all that sort of stuff, it was really nice. It was lovely.
It was also really upsetting in that she had to choose which memories that she wanted to keep or delete forever.
Yes. So,
and I just feel like what I feel that maybe was some wasted potential there, unless there is somehow a way that the character comes back, but I don't know if we're going to see that happen, really, is that, like, there are always so many themes in Star Trek about finding humanity, you know, like Spock and Data, Seven of Nine, all these, pretty much and Odo. Every series has had a character who has either a mysterious background or comes from a place of kind of logic, robotic, kind of unemotional sort of background.
Well, so far removed from humanity.
Exactly, yeah.
Or in this case, she was human and then she's lost a lot of that. So, almost it's a different aspect in that case that it could be that Data is trying to be more human, Seven is learning to be more human, Odo is trying to be a little bit more human, but in this case, she's going the opposite way.
Well,
she's
I was thinking in this case, it would be reminiscent of, I guess, Seven of Nine, because if the character of Arium were to continue on, I could very much see her fitting into that mold in the sense of trying to regain what she had lost, you know, of her fully human life, and then eventually, you know, learning that she is a new person in her own right as a cybernetic organism. I don't know. I feel like there could have been a lot more potential for character growth there. Which isn't to say that what we did have in that one episode wasn't good. I thought it was great, and I really loved it. I just wish we had more. I also just wish she was still around, adding to, I want to call it the visual diversity of the crew themselves. Because it's like, when I look at the image of the Next Generation crew, there's, like, you know, a bunch of human faces, and the things that stand out are, like, Worf's forehead, Geordi's visor, and, like, Data with the sort of gold android skin tone. Those are the things that sort of stand out and make it sci-fi, because you've got these obviously either not human or not, like, exactly 20th century human people. And I thought Arium added to that for Discovery really well, because you look at the whole thing and it's mostly humans, and there's, like, Saru and a sort of very robotic looking face. So, yeah, I'm just a little bit sad that that's not there and that's not part of it anymore.
I feel like she might have been doomed from the outset, though, in that, like, I was looking her up and they called her four different things before they eventually settled on what she actually was across, and that was even through season one, because in that case, she was called a synthetic human hybrid, then a plain old alien, then an augmented alien, and then they finally settled on augmented human.
Yeah.
And they were getting those confused even through After Trek.
I remember that.
Season one.
I remember them mentioning.
So it's almost like they didn't know what to do with her.
Oh, I think it's absolutely they didn't know what to do with her.
And she had a lot of potential storylines for B plots that could unfold.
Hmm.
And then they've just settled for, oh, look, she's augmented. She can get a virus. She can be taken over. Yeah, sort of just a very typical kind of thing. And there's also talks that they could have made her modular. Now, how good would that have been? Like, just take her arm off and put, like, a phaser on her arm.
Replace it with, like, a hyperspanner or something.
A hyperspanner, yeah. Or like an even big hyperspray, like a huge arm of hyperspray fixing people from COVID-19. You get spray, you get spray, you get spray. Like, so she could have been a much, much better character. I wouldn't say it's an unanswered question. I'd just say that is a loss of potential for the show.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. That is definitely one thing that I'm disappointed with from that season, I think, could have been better, unfortunately.
No, well, the thing about Arian for me is that, yes, there was curiosity there, but there was the same curiosity with everyone who wasn't in the forefront. So it was, you know, all of the people that were on the bridge, and we only focused on some of them. And I understand that when it's an ensemble cast, I get that, and that's fine. So when we suddenly get this one episode that you're getting this massive info dump on Arium, and
it seems very forced.
Yeah,
I didn't find it forced so much as
not forced to like.
No,
her,
no, no.
But it's like
the minute that the episode started, and I'm like, she's
gonna die.
She's gonna die because we already knew she was infected at that point. So,
yeah, we'd seen the three little dots in her eye.
And so I'm just like, oh, crap, she's going to die. That didn't make me cry any less, knowing what the end result was going to be. It still broke my heart. It still upset me in the way that it was supposed to upset me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then they have the next episode where they have her funeral. I'm like, okay. I'm just going to have this box of Kleenex with me. Thank you.
Yeah. Arium was one of my favorite background characters. And I do hope that they start bringing out things with Reese and Bryce and Detmar and Wushikun a little bit more.
Yeah.
And Sara Midicic's character, the original Arium actress.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see what she has to offer.
Yeah, because she's a bridge officer now.
Yeah, she's taken over Arium Station, so...
I think also, this is just my personal opinion, this is not in any way confirmed by anything I have read or seen, but I feel like that they painted themselves into a corner with the actual appearance of Arium and the amount of work it took to put that makeup and those appliances on the actor every
potentially,
day.
Potentially, yeah.
Because... yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it, because they're already doing that with Saru, and that is a lot with Saru. It's a lot.
But they did that with Odo and Quark.
Yeah, they did.
And then he had Terry Farrell as well with Dax's spots, and then every single other background person in DS9.
Yeah, but I...
but I suppose there's a lot more money is being spent on... sorry, Brandy. I just know a lot more money is being spent on CGI. Now, I guess, that they can't afford to do that.
Well, and it's not even a matter of money so much as it's a matter of the comfort of the actor. Because why did Sarah Midditch step down? Something must have happened that she could not perform that character in that makeup and appliances anymore. So, you know, you have to think of that as well.
Yeah, well, it could even be that they wanted to keep Sarah Midditch.
Yeah.
And they thought, well, we need to get rid of Arian. We want to keep Sarah Midditch. All right, we'll keep her... it could be even contractual. And then that leads into what could be, like you say, an issue with Arium as a character itself. So that leads into what you're saying.
Not only that, I did once see Hannah Cheeseman, who played Arium in the second season. She posted a video of what it was like for her trying to eat between scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was insanity. I don't know how she ever got enough food into her. So
I think there are an awful lot of smoothies consumed backstage on the set of Star Trek with everyone and all the makeup.
Yeah, she basically had to have something on it, what basically looked like, you know, a small ice pick or, you know, a tine of some kind. And then she had to really wide and then stick it in and then close her teeth a little and pull it back out and then carefully chew it so that she didn't, you know, make any of her appliances come off.
It'd be interesting to find out one day. Maybe I'll reach out to Hannah Cheeseman.
All right. Moving on to our next unanswered question. So what's up with the Kelpians and the Ba'ul now? Because when we left it, the Ba'ul were basically called out. The Kelpians evolved. And now they have to figure out how to live together. Are they figuring that out?
Yeah.
We just don't know. I want to know. What do you want to know?
It's like the Kelpians reached level 36, evolved and turned, changed Pokemon type. The Ba'ul seemed to be poison type and the Kelpian must have been grass and now they've turned into like ground types or something.
Fighting type or something.
Yep.
Fighting and poison. I don't, that doesn't work, but ground. I know my Pokemon types.
You're better than I do.
Yeah, I'm a Pokemon nerd.
Oh, I just love that we've made that reference again, because I know that I made that reference in the first episode of The Edge I Was Ever On, that is not what they call evolution, is actually not evolution. It's just like metamorphosis to the next stage of life. So I said that that's just only evolution in the Pokemon sense. And then that's what we named that episode.
Yeah. I remember that because that was the name. But as with the Kelpians, I feel like they were probably written... No, I won't say that. With the Kelpians, I feel like they weren't, again, sure what to do with them. Season one, you saw the Kelpians have a lot of, or they evolved with hyper speed, hyper strength to try and get them away from their predators. And then in season two, we find out that it was sort of engineered that way by the Ba'ul to just kill them off before they became predators to the Ba'ul.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think season one storyline Saru and season two storyline Saru match up as seamlessly as they want them to.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I do get the slight feeling that they maybe didn't know exactly where they wanted to take them when they first came up with the concept. I still think it's fine where they ended up.
Oh yeah, I'm not displeased about where they've ended up, and I think it's ended up better than where it could have done.
My main question is definitely like what happens now, because they've had just this massive event, probably quite traumatic for a lot of the Kelpians to be going through this thing that they think is going to be them dying, and then they realize that it's not, and now they've got all of these other adaptations, and they can shoot barbs from their threat ganglia and stuff like that.
I mean, it surely has got to descend again into some kind of war on Kamina.
Especially because it seemed like the Federation just sort of peaced out.
I disagree. I don't think that the Federation just did that. I think that once this whole situation with control was over, I'm pretty sure that they would have sent, you know, a diplomatic team to Kamina.
I would hope so.
To Kamina.
And to start working with both
the problem
of them.
But the problem with that, though, is that everything that was done in Season 2 was classified. So, that includes the jumps to Kamina.
Not necessarily everything, though.
But how would they explain why they were in Kamina and what happened and why the rapid evolution? Or Pokemon evolution?
I feel like they will find a way to skirt around that.
Yeah.
They might just end up sending a ship out there and be like, this planet is very unstable. The two species living there are now on the brink of war because one of them has gone through this evolutionary leap.
And it is Starfleet's fault.
Yeah. Something or other, you know, mumble, mumble, our fault, but classified.
Well, I mean, the Ba'ul were warp capable.
Yes, they are.
So...
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
It's not as if the Prime Directive, in terms of that regard,
I mean, it
takes
hold. If it weren't Starfleet's fault that it happened, it could apply, because the Prime Directive is not messing with pre-warp civilizations and or not getting involved in internal disputes.
Yeah, which is most definitely an internal dispute on Kamina.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, they caused it.
Yeah, unless true. You are responsible for it.
A Starfleet officer actually caused this. Well, Pike helped, but...
Yeah.
Here's another unanswered question for you. So, at the end of Such Sweet Sorrow, you had the Kelpians, such as Serana, turn up in their little Ba'ul fighters. Did they steal them from the Ba'ul and overrule them? Did the Ba'ul give them to them? Because surely the Ba'ul would have come if they're their vessels.
Yes, but the Ba'ul are isolationists, you know? I'm not sure that they would have come, even if it was... Mm. They probably would have been like, well, we're not part of the Federation. We're not going to get involved in this. Besides that, we don't like going outside. They're just a big bunch of introverts. They're practicing social distancing for like 100,000 years.
On a galactic scale.
Yep.
And I still want to know, are they made or do they live in that tar all the time?
My guess is yes.
But then what is the point in having ships with big open air spaces?
I don't know.
That's what I'm curious. I need to know more about the Ba'ul, and I don't think we're going to go to Kaminar in season 3.
How do you know?
I don't think we will.
Really fun though. We might actually.
We need to, so we know what goes on.
And I suppose it would be interesting to see Kaminar 900 years later.
Yeah.
What if the Federation can't do anything about this, up front? What if in the Section 31 series they go to Kaminar?
Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Can't do it through normal channels, so since Section 31.
Yeah.
Yes, because it's all classified, but S-31's classified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe Ash Tyler is the director of Section 31 now, apparently.
Yep. Yeah.
He is.
So it looks like, I'm just kind of imagining fantasy booking here. Like, I feel like the first season, or at least the first few episodes of, like, first season of Section 31 is going to be, like, cleaning up a little bit of the mess left over after the end of season 2 of Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's the part you never see. And I actually like seeing that part. I like the realism of that. Like, you know, superhero movies when there's just... They've had this massive battle. Like, the first Avengers movie was like that. And one of those sort of flying turtle fish creatures just lands on top of a skyscraper. And I'm like, how are they going to get that down? What are they supposed to do with that? Who is going to clean that up? Those are the things that go through my mind. And I'm sure I'm not the only person.
So me too.
I would like to see some of that process.
So just as an example, like, when Jordan always says that I'm watching a show, Jordan's my partner, listeners, he always says through a show that I come out and say the most strange things that aren't relevant to the storyline, but are in-universe. So, one day, I was watching Walking Dead, and I'm like, Jordan, how do they shower and pee? Like, that must be really awkward, because what if you're mid-pee and, like, a zombie comes?
Yeah.
You know?
These are things
like, we need to deal with this unanswered question in Walking Dead. And, like, all of those things that I bring up. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you think of the weirdest stuff through shows.
No, I do the same thing. I do the exact same thing.
So, anyway, I don't know. That would be interesting. And that's what Lower Decks is supposed to be like when it comes out.
Yeah, that's actually, that's why I'm quite excited for that. Because I think they've said that the premise of that show is that they are second contact specialists. So, once the Enterprise goes in, makes first contact and does all like the big fancy diplomatic negotiations and gets all the glory. And then they sort of, you know, head off to the next one and they send in the... What did they say? The ship's called the Cerritos, I think, which sounds like a snack.
Yum.
Yeah.
They fly in, and the way they put it is, like, they figure out, like, the best places to go for coffee on the planet. So, I guess they're basically, like, Lonely Planet researchers.
They do find that coffee in that nebula.
You know, that's the third reference to that phrase that I've had this week. So, that's now a theme week, y'all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, finally, we have one last unanswered question to talk about. What happens to Laurel and the rest of the Klingons now?
Yeah. So I was trying to kind of brainstorm ideas for this, and I thought I'd ask my partner, Moya, because she watched Discovery with me. She's watching Picard with me now, but she had never watched Star Trek or really any kind of science fiction before then. She's not a big sci-fi fan. And I was like, well, what questions do you still have from the show? Because there are some things that we as fans could just sort of watch and take for granted. But the only thing that she really brought up was like, what about Laurel? Like, what happens with all the Klingon stuff now? Because like, Laurel was by far and away, by a mile, Moya's favorite character.
I think she was one of the strongest and most well-written characters.
I think she really was. Well. And there are so many things about the Klingon storyline, especially through season two, that I don't want to say they didn't make sense so much. It's more that I don't know why certain aspects of them were there. Even to the point of, like, of Laurel and Tyler's baby, I don't really know exactly why they had that as a storyline. It seemed like it served the purpose of possibly being a split allegiance for Laurel, which was the thing that she had to overcome by then sending the baby and Tyler off with Section 31. But then we barely see or hear from Laurel anymore, so we don't know what that sacrifice actually does to her as a character.
Yeah, we don't see what she has to go through upon giving up a child in that way.
Like that episode, Point of Light, that focused mostly on the Klingons, was probably one of my favorites of season two. I just really liked it. I think the kind of the cinematography of it and the look and the sets was amazing. I really loved the little electric guitar sting when they're about to have that big fight with Kolsha. And I just thought it was a really good Game of Thrones-esque Klingon house intrigue episode. But it felt like it was seeding a lot more of that stuff to come, which we haven't got.
Mm. Well, maybe that's something we're going to see in Section 31.
I really, really hope so.
Or even the supposed apparent will it, won't it, maybe, maybe not, possibly not Pike series.
Yeah.
Well, all the actors are on board.
Yeah. I think with two potential series, I mean, one confirmed and one all but confirmed happening in that time period, I would really hope we get more stuff with Laurel as Chancellor. I know there were comics about it, which I think are what happens with her and her chancellorship after the series finishes, but I haven't read them. And of course, comics aren't canon. So
no, but they're fun.
I have no idea what happens in them. Oh, yeah, I really want to read them. The comics are great.
If you want to know what happens with them, I suggest that you listen to Literary Treks. Oh, sorry. Everybody take a drink. So, yeah, I would think that that would be a very fruitful storyline for Section 31.
In terms of point of the baby that I think you were making earlier, Nick, in terms of you're saying you didn't really see much else, or why was it even a thing? I think that baby was just brought in simply because we needed someone to be on Boreth to highlight the time issue.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that could have been it, because I saw that and T'Navik looked amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He looked. I have said before, and I will keep saying, he looked like the singer from like Dimmu Borgir or like some black metal band.
Yeah.
Lordy.
Looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. Just a tiny bit like a Minbari. But no Babylon 5 fans?
Yes.
Okay. the headpiece thing.
I was thinking a Wraith from Stargate Atlantis.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, Hero did remind me of a Wraith.
Yeah.
Which is why I struggle watching Enterprise sometimes, because I'm like, oh, look, it's a Wraith every time I see Trip.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, I saw Enterprise before Stargate Atlantis, so.
Same.
So did I. But now when I go back to watch like random episodes like I did last weekend in isolation, I'm like, oh, Wraith alert, Wraith alert. Watch out. Don't be in that decon chamber with him.
Yeah.
Now, another thing with Laurel, we saw her at the end of Such Sweet Sorrow having a lot of control within the Klingon Empire. She's managed to build all the D7s. She's on that cleave ship, definitely in charge. How long do you reckon she would be in charge for? Do you reckon she would have a stronghold? Because we haven't heard about this bomb anymore that's inside Kronos.
Yeah. I don't know. Because the only other sort of actual canonical thing we have of who is a Klingon Chancellor is Gorkon in Undiscovered Country.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a good 20-ish years later, 30 years?
Yeah, well, and then apparently they get all, you know, they get all misogynist and women are no longer allowed to be chancellors in TNG. So how did that come about?
I had someone on my own fault for getting into an argument in the comment section.
I never do that.
Something about how I, you know, was loving Laurel and Discovery, and someone was just like, but women can't be Klingon Chancellor. They said so in this episode of TNG. And I was like, yeah, but a woman became Chancellor in the Undiscovered Country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So something happened.
Yeah, and that's the silly thing about canon.
Yeah.
So. Exactly.
Well, the way that I look at it is there's possibly some really unbelievable situation that happened that made them decide, oh, okay, no more women. But I don't know what that could be. But that, unfortunately, that happens a lot in real life. So it wouldn't be surprising.
Well, I mean, you might just have some particular jerk who just can't think that a female can be a chancellor.
Yeah. And but they're very powerful.
At the end of the day, there has been and there will be. Yeah. And things flow to and from that. I mean, it is a very powerful sort of race, I guess, that sometimes they think that women aren't as powerful when we know that they are. Especially with, like, is it Lyrta and...
Lyrsa and Betor.
Lyrsa and Betor, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're awesome characters. Shame that their chest is out for the world to see, but, you know.
The weird boob window in the armor, yeah.
Yeah, like late 90s or early 90s and 80s. Got to try and get the boys to watch.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, that's unfortunately omnipresent through pretty much all of Trek until Discovery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just, Laurel is cool and Mary Chifo is an amazing actor. I just want to see, even if we can't see more of Laurel, I want them to bring Mary Chifo back to play someone.
I want her to be a live-action She-Hulk. Because there is going to be a live-action She-Hulk.
Oh, that would be amazing.
She would be perfect in every way.
Yeah.
I want that so much. They'd have to paint her green, but hey, she'd be up for it.
She's good in full makeup.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I would love that. But I would love to have her back on Star Trek, period. I'd love to have Laurel back. So, crossing fingers.
And I'm going to skirt on the line of spoilers here on Picard. As long as they don't bring her back to play a relative of a relative and look exactly the same as a previous relative.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that brings up some interesting theories as well. But anyway. All right. So, everybody, gentlemen, final thoughts. Let's start with you, Nick.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we talked about all of these today. It's important to think about stuff that we still want to see. I guess this is kind of questions and concerns like we talk about on postcards and stuff. What are my biggest unanswered questions? I don't really know. I think a lot of it is the situations with the Kelpians and with the Klingons, you know, these political systems that were sort of messed up in some way and we haven't got the conclusion of it yet. So, hoping we get some more about that in whatever either Section 31 or Captain Pike and the Enterprise shows we get in the coming years.
Yeah, like every TV series is going to leave us some unanswered questions here and there. Some of them aren't as big and annoying. I mean, in the case of Laurel and Tyler and the Klingons, I'm sure, like you say, we're going to get some more information about them in either the Section 31 show or the Hopeful Pike show. The Kelpians and the Ba'al, I feel like that's an egregious sort of misstep in not knowing what's going on. So let's hope they deal with that in season three. And the Logic Extremists, whilst it's an interesting idea, it's probably not the be all and end all for the show itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Brandy.
Well, I think that unanswered questions in movies and television series are actually a lot like life. There are certain aspects of life that we never find out how the story ends or what happened after that. So they don't bother me as much because I'm really good at just imagining a connection to something else. But in the cases of, again, Laurel and the Klingons and the Ba'ul and Kelpians, I feel like there is a way that they can return to that and actually help us understand how did we get from now the Ba'ul are not in control of the Kelpians anymore to Serana piloting a Kelpian, or not a Kelpian, excuse me, a Ba'ul ship. How did we get from there to there? It's been a long road getting from there to here, and I have to do that every time. My time is finally here.
Faith of the Heart is becoming the Rickrolling of the Star Trek fan.
It is, really much, isn't it?
I do it so much now, you guys, because, you know, I was talking about getting from there to here, and that just triggers it. It's like I have to do it now. I'm compelled. A spell has been put on me.
I use it to annoy Jordan.
Good for you. Good for you.
I did it the other day in bed. I told you, Brandy. I started singing the Enterprise theme in the style of Cher. whilst we were lying in bed at like 11 at night, I really loudly in his ear.
Of course you did. Anyway. So, it's been fun talking about the Enterprise theme and laying in bed and doing it in the style of Cher, but that's not all we've been discussing on the network. So, here is a quick listen.
Doing what in the style of Cher?
I think that review had a point. We are terrible.
I'm going to start this section over. I'm going to go a totally different way.
Yeah, you might need to.
So here's a quick listen to some of the other things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think the difference is that Flashback is intentionally trying to carve Voyager a little place within the fabric of the Undiscovered Country, say, and it's trying to place Tuvok. Well, it's trying almost to retcon, isn't it? Because Tim Russ was in that film as one of the Excelsior crew, so it's trying to do a retcon. And say,
he was in Generations. He wasn't even in that film.
He
was like, and I suppose it's a Brannon Braga episode as well. Brannon Braga wrote Generations. Brannon Braga, I suppose, must have realised maybe unconsciously realised that Tim Russ was in Generations as a different character.
He was,
so
wasn't
it's,
he?
It's almost like a weird sort of
I've got that wrong, you're
well, I
right
know whether on some no but I wonder whether unconsciously on some level that's the connection you're supposed to be sort of slipping into. And of course that he was serving on an Excelsior class ship.
Earl Grey.
I want to see that spaceship that's got giant space-time knitting needles. Yeah. and they just like do that, like as they warp through space fixing it behind themselves. That'd be awesome.
Literary Treks.
The one that I left out that in hindsight I regret it is the one where he's is it Wink of an Eye, where he's fighting the guy in the quarters and he actually throws a pillow at the other guy and it hits him in the face and stops him dead in his tracks for 2 seconds, long enough for Kirk to get the upper hand on him. And I don't even know how to describe this. You know, I don't even know what to give. I couldn't come up with a name for it. That was probably the biggest thing, is I couldn't come up with a catchy name for it. Pillow talk or something, maybe in high school.
Stopped him dead in his tracks because he's like, did you just throw
a pillow?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast. I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised by that. But
and his blood was very bright green.
Very bright green.
But, yeah.
Bravo. Bring Quentin Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get good podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop podcast app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. It helps us jump up the charts and find more listeners.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from the website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. There are so many ways for you to do that, but the best place to join in the larger conversation is where? The Babel Conference. You know this already.
Where?
Where? Facebook. Just go to the search field on Facebook and type in Babel. That's B-A-B-E-L. Come on, you guys know how to spell it. And it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge, and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Liam, when you're not boosting a bowel fighter and playing Faith of the Heart on full volume on the stereo, where can people find you?
I really want Cher to do a cover now. So, you can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me on the Babel Conference, and you can find me on To The Journey, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. So, Brandy, when you're secretly not wanting to dress up like Laurel, where can people find you when you're on the internet?
It's not a secret. What are you talking about? You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. You can find me lurking in the Babel Conference on Facebook. You can find me again Sunday on Live from the Edge with Bruce Gibson, my friend, talking about each new episode of Star Trek Discovery after it happens. And at the time that this is going to be released, we will have done a live show about Star Trek Picard, which we tentatively called the Unready Room because we were unready. But that will have wrapped up by the time that this episode drops. But you can still go back and watch the videos of that on the Kurt Ratz Productions. Let me try that again. You can still go back and watch the videos of that on Kurt Ratz Productions channel on YouTube, which is Dan Gunther's channel. Dan Gunther, of course, of Literary Treks. Drink along with Bruce. And then you can find me on the Dark Corner podcast with my fabulous husband, Dave, talking about stuff and things, whatever we like from sort of a darker point of view. It's almost always nerdy. And also on the same, in the same place, you can find me doing my solo podcast of Headcanon, where I talk about all my weird fandoms and all the weird things that go on in my brain. And yes, I do go off on many, many tangents because there's no one there to stop me. And
you can also find out what Brandy really thinks about.
Yes,
that.
you can find
the
out
most recent
my
Edge review,
my unfiltered opinion about that. And so, yeah, on both of those podcasts, there will be swears from time to time. Just a forewarning, but you can find both of those at darkcornerpodcast.com. So, Nick, when you're not telling us stuff about insect waveforms, it's probably going to get cut out of the final edit of this. Where can people find you?
It probably will.
Oh, dear. And that can just be a nice mystery for all the listeners.
Yeah.
You can find me... Hold up, writing my thesis.
You can find me social distancing.
Yeah, that too. You can't find me at the moment. No. You can find me on Twitter, where I am at Punk Zoologist. and on Instagram, where I am at Punk Rock Zoologist. And also, you will quite often see me commenting in the Babel Conference. Most often active on the postcards threads whenever we get any new episode or a little bit of Star Trek to talk about.
So, we'd love to give a shout out to our wonderful associate producers. They are Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, and Chris Trapuzio. Thank you for supporting The Edge and Trek FM via Patreon. If you'd like to become an associate producer of The Edge or any of our shows on Trek FM and help us at the same time, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. And that is patreon.com/trekfm, just in case you needed that.
Well, everyone, thank you again for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge.
Wait for it.
Of Federation Space.
Yeah, actually, I think I did say the majority of the cast in Discovery. Mm-hmm. Because also Rice and Brees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Brees and Rice. Bryce and Brees.
There was one guy. I can't.
Bryce and Brees. You have cursed me for all time. They're always
Anytime they come up on screen now, Randy's just going to think Rice and Brees.
Yes, I am. Oh, that was, yeah.